Yeah, I have statistics to back up that we have people that listen.
Mike Schaefer.
Anytime there's sort of a debate as to who can do something, Happer would always put his name forth.
For sure.
Husker 24-7 on the Connor Happer Show on 1620 The Zone.
I could be a star.
All right, so when fans inevitably blame the media that the hype train got too off the rails and all of you are to blame for whatever bad happens during the season, we'll all be looking around like John Travolta in Pulp Fiction. Who? Us? Because it's the Croots that are responsible for the Kool-Aid this time. Mike Schaefer joins us on the 42 Degrees of Source Hotline. Schaefer, good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say blame me. If it doesn't work out, I accept the blame. Just go after me. I am sitting here in beautiful, sunny South Lincoln at a Kool-Aid station, just ready to re-up and refill whoever stops by, looking for something refreshing to drink here this off season as we head into the summer and eventually
fall. It's not your fault. You're just talking to people, and they're saying the thing that, like, they're stirring up the Kool-Aid. Like, you're just I don't even know what your responsibility is. You're just pouring the water into the jug, and they're putting the sugar in.
Sure. That's all very true, but here's the thing. I believe in the Kool-Aid. Like, and I had my whole thing a couple of weeks ago, how I was like, they're going to be at least 8-4 or better. I believe in this team, and then, of course, Saturday only reinforced it. So, and it is very, very important to acknowledge this critical thing from Saturday. It was all relatively set up to make the offense look good.
Definitely.
I mean, they didn't play a lot of defensive players, et cetera, et cetera. That being said, the bar is so low for Nebraska's offense,
yes,
that they hurdled it quite easily. And I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about what you saw on Saturday, regardless of the fact Nebraska did not do much defensively.
Okay, so at what point on Saturday did they hurdle the bar of last year's offense? Was it like the third play or like whenever – because they looked just comfortable just the entire way when Dylan Raiola was the quarterback, assuming that's pretty close to what we're going to get on offense from a personnel standpoint. I think they hurdled it at about 11:15 on Saturday.
Yeah, I think for me it was when that sequence kind of occurred where you had the Ja'Cory Barney touchdown, and then it was met with the Jalen Lloyd touchdown. Like, you could just kind of – So there's two reasons, I think, to be excited, obviously, about Nebraska's offense. The first is Dylan Raiola appears to be a very, very capable freshman option to be a starting quarterback for you. So that's box number one. I'm sure we'll get back to that in a second. Here's the other thing. This wide receiver group is good. They are very – like, I feel like you and I and you and everyone that – me and all the other people have all discussed this on radio, podcasts, written about it. People actually got to see it on Saturday. They have athletes at wide receiver. They have guys that can go make plays. They have guys that look comfortable adjusting when they need to on a pass. And now they have quarterbacks that look like they can get them the ball. And the whole offense just looked crisp because it was built on timing that wasn't there all of last year. And so I think these wide receivers, and I was already, you know, completely over the moon about Jalen Lloyd, and Ja'Cory Barney was my number two player in this last class. So I was, you know, you didn't have to sell me on those guys. But then they went out and they did it anyway, Happer. Like, they looked good, and they looked like pieces that can help right away. And then, oh, by the way, Isaiah Nair looked good. Looked fast.
Yeah.
You know, he, like, looked like a real helpful piece. And then physically, these guys are just in a better spot than where Nebraska was last year with their wide receiver core. Like, I just think it's a night and day difference of what the wide receiver group was a year ago in the spring game and what it looked like on Saturday.
Yeah, they're kind of deep too. You know, there was a couple of guys that didn't even play in that game that we assume are going to be factors in the fall, like Malachi Coleman and Isaiah Garcia-Castaneda. So, yeah, that was definitely one of my takeaways from it as well. But anyway, back to the subject. Okay, so Dylan Raiola, He was the player. He was the quarterback in that game. I don't think there were other ones, right?
Was it Dylan Raiola or was it Patrick Mahomes or can we even tell it?
Exactly. It's like MJ and Kobe, according to some.
For real.
I was amazed at the competence. When a freshman of that caliber is going to come in, like you know what he's going to do or what he can do as far as the ceiling is concerned, right? The throws that he's capable of making, but the little quarterback stuff, the poise, the calm, the ability to get his team in and out of stuff. And I don't know, man, he checked boxes that I don't think that I expected him to check. And I expected him to check a lot when we went into that thing on Saturday.
I thought you were going to say check boxes for things you didn't even have written down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, probably.
Like, part of it for me, and again, like, we're going to get so far over our skis on this, but I think it's because we haven't really seen a quarterback that has this kind of arm talent. That two-point conversion pass, I don't know if it looked like it on television, but live, that seemed to be such an incredibly difficult throw.
They showed another angle on TV, and only then you got the appreciation for what he did.
Like, the window that he threw that in, the way he manipulated the defense to create the window, the touch that he put on the pass, like, it was so perfect that I said out loud, I put on our mess. Well, first I made a noise that I can't replicate. But then secondly, I said this out loud and then put it on my message board. I genuinely don't know that I have watched another Nebraska quarterback that could make that pass in the exact same way. And again, it was a 2-yard pass for a 2-point conversion, but the degree of difficulty in the window and how that was thrown and the level of like perfect that the ball was, you know, to be in that area. It's just like, there's not, you know, like you have to go back to Joe Gann. Like it's, and even then we're not talking about like elite arm, but it's just the ability to move the defenders, to do every little piece of that play.
Yes.
With all the other parts of your body before you even get into the throw. That was just such he's 18 years old and he's doing that.
Yeah.
And again, it's a scrimmage. So like, again, we're way, way out in front of everything here, but this is the level of talent that Nebraska got when he made the decision to switch from Georgia to Nebraska last December.
But you do notice, I'm struck by this too, when he talks about it after the game, a lot of the quarterbacks, especially those over the last few years, they often get up there and they talk about results and the, you know, what they did wrong and what they did right. And, you know, it's kind of boilerplate stuff. And he was asked at one point to go back through one of the plays, whatever it was. And he say, yeah, well, I saw the safety move off. And so I went to my next, like, whatever. He'll take you through kind of the process of it. He just seems really advanced. That has such far reaching capabilities and, results for this offense, for what he just brings you on his floor. And I think that's my biggest takeaway from Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could see on full display that this was a guy who had been groomed to be a college level quarterback for that exact moment. I mean, all the little things, all the work that he's put in, to be able to look off, to recognize the progression, all of it. And then there's probably a third critical point that I didn't mention when I mentioned him and then really quarterback play in general and then the wide receivers. Here's another thing. The whole offense just looks exceedingly competent in a way that it did not a year ago. Like they had such simple plays that it just felt like they couldn't have run last year, where the timing of it looked really good. The concepts of what they were doing looked really good. Going back to the timing, that Heinrich Harburg pass to Nate Borkercher, another just outstanding throw where he put it exactly where it needed to be in the right window at the right time in the right place. And that throw should have people feeling a little bit better about the idea of if they go with Dylan Raiola, and I think they will, then Heinrich Harburg's your backup quarterback. And if he needs to play, he's shown that he has the arm. The accuracy can always stand to get a little bit better, but there, you know, the throw to Ja'Cory Barney, he had to adjust to it, but there was only one guy who was coming away with that throw. So there's, there's just a lot to like about Marcus Satterfield's offense in year two that they just quite frankly could not run, could not do, didn't have the personnel, didn't have the pieces to do it, that suddenly looked simple, like genuinely simple. They were running video game concepts with their wide receivers for like the first time ever at Nebraska. You had trips to the right and you had ran a guy at drag across with Ja'Cory Barney that was right there, and three levels of in-breakers that attack the defense different ways. Like, there's just stuff going on that you aren't normally used to seeing with Nebraska, let alone last year's version of the offense that is sort of hard to even describe after what we saw on Saturday.
I mean, they had to go away from everything. They were so burned.
It was a hard reset. It really was.
Yeah. So on that, let me take it a step further then, because I had the same takeaway as you, and I was thinking about it from the perspective of Marcus Satterfield, who you mentioned. If you're Marcus Satterfield, who took a lot of crap from the fan base last year because of offensive play calling, when we, for whatever reason, failed to recognize that Nebraska couldn't get competent quarterback play from anybody that had asked last year. If you're Marcus Satterfield today or watching the spring game over again, are you just sitting there like, come on, what do you have anything to say to me now? You know, you're like, why did they judge me last year with the quarterback room we had, and now they're going to have this? And there will still be judging, but I got to think that Marcus Satterfield is probably one of the people who feels the best coming off of Saturday, considering what the narrative was last year on him.
I feel like that probably lasts only as long as Philly puts on the tape and finds stuff that he needs fixed or that wouldn't work against, you know, a better defense or what you will. I mean, knowing him just a little bit in the time since he's been here, he doesn't really strike me as a, like, ever going to puff his chest out guy. He seems more like he's just waiting for the other shoe to drop sometime. So I would imagine that he would take this as the victory that it is while immediately trying to figure out what they can build upon it, which is a good thing. I mean, you want that. You certainly want that from this coaching staff. Let me throw a question at you at this point, because normally I feel like we come out of the spring game and you kind of have to, like, make some sort of explanation for why something looked the way that it did that wasn't positive. Outside of special teams, did you walk out of Saturday with a lot of questions about Nebraska football in a negative sense?
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't – I don't know what you can do with the defense, but it wasn't because of anything that they did or didn't do.
Well, they didn't play anybody.
Right, exactly.
Like, they legitimately just did not play their best players.
Right, and it wasn't, like you said, a situation that was set up for them at all. So, I don't know. I guess I still have just more general questions there, but nothing that impacted – nothing was impacted about it on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, like, all the stuff, if you're doing it year over year, and like you said, maybe this is where we need to adjust our frame of mind here. But like, if you're doing it year over year, the wide receivers are infinity times better. The quarterback is infinity times better. The offensive line is definitely a step better. Like, and so that should theoretically do enough on the offensive side of the ball, which is undoubtedly the biggest, you know, worry, and we just assume that the defense is going to be, you know, at the very least good again, if not better than that.
Yeah, something that kind of got lost right at the beginning of the game, that a couple inside runs out of the shotgun that they blocked up really well.
Yep.
That is one of those sort of plays, whether it's Emmett Johnson or Ramir Johnson, because they feel like the guys that would be better at it. Those, I think, could be pretty impactful when teams are sitting back trying to defend your wide receiver play. And you can hit with some of those quick hitters, and if your line moves the way that they did on Saturday, there's just a lot to like about the pieces that have been put together here in this offense. It didn't all come together at the same time, and there's a lot of areas where you're old and young, and an equal blend of it at, like, the wide receiver room. But just even the line play looked relatively crisp on Saturday.
I agree. What was your takeaway from Thomas Fedoni? Who, I mean, I, because the question was asked to Rule after the game. I thought he looked more explosive than he has been. And as Rule explained, that'll happen when you're just healthy for a longer period of time now. So the thought is, if you have these guys that can make plays for you on the outside and you have the quarterback that can get it to him, he probably stands to gain. He probably is you know, one of the biggest gainers out of this entire process to where he could be a real factor in this offense. Like, I don't think I've ever been higher on him than I am at this moment.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I would say at this time last year, even just sort of going into the season, I would have basically downplayed it with, yeah, you know, the best thing that could happen here is he's just able to get through the year healthy. So he had kind of already exceeded my expectations last year, because I thought he looked pretty solid, and I just didn't know what to expect with him. And then, of course, in the spring game, he looked good. Like, this was a guy that was a really dominant high school player. Like, this was a huge recruiting win when it happened. This was probably the biggest Scott Frost recruiting win. Maybe Wandale, depending on how you want to, or one of those linemen. We could hash that out. But this was a huge, huge recruiting win because of the type of player he could be. And then you just got two straight years where he just never got to do anything, has to kind of start back over. And so I thought, you know, you touched on this a little bit, but I thought Rule's sort of comment about, like, this is an off season where he gets to build upon something kind of struck me like, yeah, you know, I hadn't put it that way. But when you're just constantly just trying to achieve and see what you can do without having the basis of the background because you've been hurt, you can't really – You know, you're starting at a different point, and he has a different jumping off point here. And he looked fluid, looked comfortable, and just another addition to what is a really quietly underrated wide receiver pass catching room. Like, I think Nebraska will enter Big Ten play, or enter the season, if you will, with one of the best wide receiver pass catching groups in the entire conference. And that's not something you've said a lot. Crazy. Or if ever.
Schaefer, we'll let you go on this. Give us a run through, I guess, of the recruiting weekend, which has taken a back seat to everything, even though it was notable, the people they had on campus. Like, how'd everything turn out in that category?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they will get commitments out of this weekend. I don't know that we're going to hear of them, you know, right away here today, but they'll certainly come out of it. Some of the big ones had several wide receivers on campus. Michael Terry, the third, is a five-star from Texas that can play a number of offensive positions. He walked out of it, you know, obviously raving about Dylan Raiola, but loves the staff, loves the energy of what Nebraska has put forward. Dawson Merritt, another one of the official visitors, the guy who's talking about, really made the strong comparison of Mahomes and Raiola. He said this, and I thought this was kind of the big takeaway. You can go to Nebraska and you can play early. You know, that was one of the big knocks on Scott Frost, is that he didn't necessarily always put his young guys in and let them sink or swim. He did with some of them, but not all of them. Here, you know, if you're a young guy and you see Ja'Cory Barney and Dylan Raiola just ripping it up at a spring game when they just enrolled in January, like Dawson Merritt said, how can he not think that he can't? Like, if he does his end of things, Nebraska's going to get him on the field. And so it's on, if he were to go to Nebraska, he knows if he does his work, he's going to get that opportunity. There's not some invisible barrier in front of him. And so I think that was a huge takeaway for a lot of those visitors that were in town. And I think Nebraska stacked a lot of good trips on top with 2026 guys and 2027s and made some interesting offers. It's been kind of a slow build recruiting-wise. I expect it to really pick up here in May and certainly blow up in January, or excuse me, June.
All right, Schaefer, we'll let you go. Appreciate the time as always. Enjoy. By the way, what's your favorite flavor of Kool-Aid outside of Raiola flavored, I guess?
Yeah, sure. Huge black cherry guy growing up. That was always in the cupboard at the Schaefer family household. Really, really like the black cherry flavor. Pretty much like black cherry anything. Like, that's a go-to flavor for me when it's an option.
That sounds disgusting. Gross. That's my only takeaway from that. Gross. Bye, Schaefer.
Yeah.
No response to that. He didn't want to argue about black cherry Kool-Aid. No. Maybe he didn't hear me.
Like Sharkleberry Finn.
Okay. Now we got to pull this up.
Yeah. Come on.
Kool-Aid flavors. By the way, do we have another Capri Sun back there?
Oh, yeah. We got two in the fridge.
I need one right now.
Ready to go for you right now?
Sugar. No. During the break. Kool-Aid packets, the ultimate bundle.
Ultimate bundle.
This is on. They're selling Kool-Aid on Amazon now. I just feel weird if I got Kool-Aid off of Amazon, I guess.
Why is there a flavor called Jamaica?
Well,
I need more than that.
Kool-Aid. Discover all the brand's drinks. Watermelon.
Hell yeah.
Let's see. Pina colada. No, pina pineapple, whatever that means. Strawberry. Lemonade.
Give me that blue raspberry. Except
the Kool-Aid
lemonade.
That's kind of good.
Mm-hmm.
Mandarina tangerine.
What are you looking
at? I'm looking at Kool-Aid.com or popsamerica.com/Kool-Aid. Lemon lime? Interesting. I'm intrigued. Mixed berry, black cherry, peach, mango. Strawberry kiwi sounds pretty sweet. I'm more of a green blue guy, like I've always said. Okay. With my candies and my sugars. Green or blue? If it's green or blue, I'm probably going to be in on it.
Okay.
If it's red, it's gonna have to be light red, you know, like straying toward the watermelon, okay, away from the cherry. I don't want a deep red.
This pink swamingo looks good. Looks like it's like a cherry watermelon.
But here's my question. Tropical punch looks really good, too. Here's my question. Where the hell is grape? What happened to grape?
Yeah. Like, I don't think they do basic anymore. Do they?
I
mean, they probably do. But
pink lemonade sounds awesome. I got to get some pink lemonade Kool-Aid. We need to have some on deck here.
Okay.
So that'll be your next thing.
We can add
that
to the
bar.
No
more Capri Suns. Just give me some straight crack. The sugar.
Just mixing Kool-Aid in between breaks.
Now. Okay. Hockey Dad likes Schaefer's take. 100% correct. Black cherry anything is excellent.
Black cherry flavor up at Happer Show poll question.
Please vote.
Running at 50-50 right now. It's been up for like 45 seconds.
Brad writes in.
Hi, Brad.
Subject line, purple stuff. If you know, you know. No, not talking about the purple drink. Just talking about purple sticky punch. Grape-flavored things. Grape-flavored.
Let's all go home and watch Biodome tonight.
We'll come back with the odd news on 1620 The Zone. I do have a reminder for you all to join the email list, 1620 The Email. You'll be the first to know about all the exciting things that are going on with us and all the weird foods that we're trying as well. You'll get it right to your inbox, including sports news, contest promotions, and plenty more. Sign up today or I'll be really angry or I'll get triggered.
We don't want that.
1620thezone.com.